All right, here it comes. Welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Brandon Rhodes, and we are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
I couldn't do it.
No, that's fine. You were missing it.
We're covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles, alternative transportation, arts and culture, communications. The internet speaking way too quickly, not even facing the mic.
That's okay. Yeah. No, we're in the groove now. So tell me what you were about to tell me before I press record.
Well, first of all, I just want to welcome our listeners to round two of four intros in a row.
Yeah, yeah. So, and that's round two of rum for you, but I'm still on my first.
Well, this is two shots in the first, and this is just a oneer.
Oh, there you go.
A onesie.
Okay.
So what I was just telling you is I both listened to a public radio snippet and then read a article in a scientific periodical about some folks in the great state north of us, Washington, who have the linguists have discerned a Pacific Northwest accent.
I mean, we have one.
Well, all languages, all if you speak it, it's an accent. Like
if you will it is no dream.
Yeah, Theodore Herzl. It is no fable. Yeah, and
Trying to make a Lebowski reference.
I know, I got. I just cited that in my paper, and I had to look it up to get the actual citation. It turns out the common translation of his German is
right. It wasn't actually Walter.
Well, if you will, it is no fable. Anyway,
okay.
That's Lebowski aside, man. Yeah, we talked a little bit different. We, for example, if there's a hard consonant in the middle of a word, mm-hmm. we don't actually say that.
Like mountain.
Yeah, mountain or say the city Cattle.
Seattle.
Yeah, you replace the T's with a D.
That's right. It's kind of like a consonant slur.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with a constant slur, which is what kind of I'm in now, I think.
Yeah. Give me a present tense of a verb.
Present tense. I am recording now.
You almost defied the rule.
Really?
Yeah. You don't. We don't say G's at the end. Like, evidently, other parts of the country, it is more common. But then the thing that's really interesting, this is across the country, but generationally, they're now saying that especially women, almost entirely women, will do, what is it? It's like a burnt talk or some weird phrase like that. That kind of voice.
Oh, like a guttural sort of thing.
Yeah,
like
kind of like.
I don't want to speak badly about them, but they'll drop down. This whole thing.
They'll end words or sentences with it. But the thing is.
Right.
Anyway, evidently this is a completely freak generational thing where a lot of the women in our generation talk this way. So,
that's right, but it's sexy and sultry. Maybe that's why they do it.
It's kind of odd.
I mean, do you think that?
Well, who is that?
Could be.
There's even some actresses out there that seem to have a voice stuck in that. Like that lady who does the she did some advertisements for some sort of gadget a while back, but she's on The Daily Show.
Okay.
She's like both cute and ugly.
Okay, I don't watch her.
Anyway,
I don't watch The Daily Show.
Anyway,
that makes me a bad person.
Yeah,
definitely a bad liberal, possibly a bad American.
Yes,
but a really, really good simplifier.
Yeah, well done.
Thank you.
I'm distancing myself from enlightenment.
Yeah, I was going to say it comes with not having cable, but I mean you could get that on the internet too.
Yeah.
I'm just lazy. I listen to a lot of podcasts, is what I do. I was thinking a bike snob actually had a thing about some lady who says she really likes biking. Is dropping the G on the end of the biking.
Biking.
Yeah.
She likes biking.
Biking.
She likes All Shoes by Keen.
That's exactly, yeah. And I said, I think I told that to my wife, and she thought that I was making fun of, like, you know, someone's accent. And I was just like, well, no, it's just funny because Bike Snob said it. And if Bike Snob said it, then you can say it, and it's okay, I think.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
So, anyways. Well, I remember someone told me that, like, if you grow up in the Northwest, you end up sounding like a news reporter. I'm not sure if that's true or not.
Well, it's the West Coast accent that Hollywood basically standardized. It doesn't
right.
sound grindingly Jimmy Stewart-ish. It doesn't sound, you know, like Fran Drescher or the South.
Yeah. Do you remember you were telling me, I think, it was either you or our friend Lewis, might have been you, talking about how the guy that played the lead role in There Will Be Blood
yes,
ended up
that
studying.
Was me.
Yeah.
Studying. No, not me in that role, but Daniel Day-Lewis.
Daniel Day-Lewis ended up studying like the earliest recordings of speech in the American West,
yes,
trying to figure out how people sounded when they talked.
How did men speak in the Reconstruction era?
Yeah.
And the, you know, kind of industrial blah de blah. And so that strange way that he talked.
Exactly.
In that movie. I drink your milkshake.
I drink your eggnog.
Yeah, yeah. And you know how it sounds kind of British, mm-hmm. but, and there are times where he just sounds like a Brit.
Right.
But no, it's this weird, odd accent that was very prevalent, and he listened to recordings from way back when.
Is Daniel Day-Lewis, is he actually British?
I think so. He's also, I think, fully badass.
So he could really be whatever he wants to
be. Yeah, and the fact that he's going to be portraying America's 16th president.
Oh, that's right.
Next year. I think Scorsese's directing it. But anyway, yeah, it's...
Wait, 16th, that's Lincoln,
we have no recordings of Lincoln.
Okay.
But I'll be really curious to see how he probably is going to apply that same tone.
Yeah.
But, you know, he spoke a little more nasally, they say.
Right.
So
is he playing Lincoln as a vampire hunter?
No.
No, okay.
That would be a better movie.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I drink your blood. I drink it up.
Yeah. Oh, good times. Well, hey.
We haven't talked about bicycles once yet. No.
How about some more mail? All right. Oh, and I guess I could do this. You've got some mail. There we go. And I'm actually reading it right from the email box. This has not been curated or prepared or presented in any way.
It hasn't been copied and pasted into Google Docs. No, it's straight from the Gmail.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Okay.
So Laura Moulton, we had her on with Street Books a while back, and she just wanted to let people know that there's a book drive happening right now. It's, Thursday, December 15th, which is coming up. Well, I guess by the time you've heard this this recording, it'll already have been.
For God's sake, Brock.
Okay, so I got to this a little bit too late. But there are some details on the web. If you can't make it to the book drive, they're always taking books. Consider making a tax-deductible donation online at streetbooks.org. They have a post office box, and I would imagine you could probably send them a small paperback at least that would fit in their post office box. Or something like that. And they have a list of, I think, books that people... Yeah, they have a wish list of books that folks are looking for from that Street Books deal. And the Street Books, of course, if you haven't heard the episode in which we talked to Laura Moulton, is it's a cargo bike with books inside of it. And people that either live outside or sleep outside or otherwise don't really have an address to get a library card with, they can go up and grab books from Street Books, which is pretty cool. So there's that. And then, let's see here. Oh, yeah, Logan passed this along. This is from show guest Dave, who runs the website Dave Knows, Portland edition. And December 3rd, 1971, this is a kind of a historical summary, Oregon Trail game played for the first time. And let's see, it was one of the first simulation computer games played in Don Rowich's history class. Yeah. At Bryant Junior High in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So it happened in Minnesota, of course, because that was the...
Minnesota Education Consortium.
Computing Consortium. Yeah,
it was
MECC. But, of course, it was the Oregon Trail, which ends here. So of general interest to us, I suppose, and possibly some of you. So we'll stick that up on our website.
It blows my mind that it's 40 years old.
It's been a long time. And you know how many different versions of that game have existed? Like, there are so many... It's pretty great.
But there's only one trail.
That's right. And then let's see here. Oh, well, you know what? I'm going to save this one for later because we only have a couple of these. So that's the end of our mail segment. Anyways, this will be our friend Gina in just a couple minutes for you. For us, it'll be in a couple, about a week.
Yeah.
But that's that whole weird time shift paradox thing that you out there listening to the podcast don't have to worry about. I'm going to have another sip of my eggnog, which you have decimated yours already. This is week two for this eggnog for me. So, well, hey, happy getting close to Christmas time. And of course, I suppose by the time this podcast reaches your ears, I will be headed to Boston, shipping out to Boston, as they say. So, yeah, if any of you listeners out there on the East Coast or possibly in Boston are interested in getting in touch, please do so. It would be good.
You want excuses to get away from the in-laws. Is that what I'm hearing?
Not necessarily. I mean, I may actually need that at some
Adam
point.
And perhaps Adam Caress.
Possibly, yeah, yeah.
You two can go smoke cigarettes.
We'll abscond to another place where we can take part in our vices.
Dude, you're holding back on some killer vocabulary, man.
Thanks. I do my best. But definitely. I'm out there for a couple weeks, so it'd be nice to bump into some folks. I'll be Twittering and possibly stalking on Facebook, some of you as well. So that's it. All right. Well, we will see you next week with another installment of the Sprocket Podcast.
Bye.
Right after Christmas. Here we are again on the Sprocket Podcast. This is Brock, that's Brandon, and we are joined today by our lovely wives. We were planning on having a guest. Our friend Gina was going to speak with us, but I think we had like a miscommunication about time, or she hates us. That's the two options I had figured out. But Adele, welcome. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And Candace, thank you for joining us.
Hi.
This is one of those situations where it kind of does feel like we're just like sitting in our bedroom, like the whole, you know,
because all four of us sometimes just hang out in the bedroom sometimes.
Well, in the house at least. And it's like, I don't know, like when you listen to the introductory episodes of a podcast, usually it'll be like, and here's this guy that I know. And it's like nobody famous.
Are you talking about our own podcast?
But that's all four of us. Yeah. I mean, here we are. It's just like us being at home. So. Adele has a hot toddy that she just mixed for herself, which is pretty great.
Yeah, it's not really a hot toddy. I follow a real recipe. I just refer to all hot drinks with alcohol as that. But Candace corrected me because she's kind of the mix master, mistress.
Ooh.
The mix mistress.
That's me, I guess.
And what are you drinking there, Candace?
Well, I guess by Adele's definition, I too am drinking a hot toddy, but it's actually hot cider with spiced rum.
Okay, there we go.
What's actually in a hot toddy now?
I think it's like hot water, lemon juice, honey, and then rum or some kind of alcohol, maybe whiskey. Tastes like a cough drop. But
so it's
liquid.
Almost medicinal.
Yeah.
Very much so. Mm. That's my kind of medicine.
It's a good
for
thing.
Sure.
Yeah. Takes away the pain.
I remember a friend of ours.
I feel better.
Yeah. A friend of ours who will remain nameless is, I think at one point he was at a bar and ordered a hot toddy and it wasn't quite to his liking and so he sent it back. And I remember thinking to myself, if I was drinking that or if I had ordered it, I think I would have just slugged it down. But I'm a little bit less discriminate than some of our friends.
You're not a foodie.
Not so much. Not at all, in fact. We were just discussing the merits of various flavors of Gardetto's snacks.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bag sitting in the corner of the room here.
It looks full. How is that possible?
With me?
Yeah.
It is kind of surprising. Shocking. No, that's just because I had a couple more bags that I bought for various meals out. the night before last.
You're goodifying the simple life, is what you're doing.
I guess. You know? I'm getting back into the foil packages that I swore I would never get back to. So, yeah, all you out there, do as I say, not as I do. But no, I was up overnight the other night. It was we had coffee infused drinks. With alcohol.
Hot toddies.
Indeed, among others.
A plenty.
In case any of your employers are listening. Bro,
that's right. Well, of course.
Well,
that was...
statute of limitations.
Mm-hmm.
You're okay.
Yeah, it was well before the 8 hours required before the beginning of my shift.
Mm-hmm.
As per, I believe, federal transportation regulations.
Yes.
I should not have been drinking at, 11:30 p.m., but this was like 7 or 8 o'clock at night, but that's still too late to have like a full caffeinated beverage.
of cold press concentrate.
Ooh.
Did you mix the concentrate with water?
That
or
wasn't
did
just
you
coffee, homie.
Measure a lot of concentrate? Did you have a full cup of concentrated coffee?
I didn't have a full cup.
7 o'clock at night.
But I had a lot of concentrate. Now that I'm thinking it through.
That's why you couldn't sleep.
No wonder I was awake.
It was a concentrate. You're supposed to add 2 tablespoons of it and then fill the rest of the cup up with water.
Oh my. Oh my. And I had 2 of those.
Oh my God.
Wow.
So anyways, that's why I was up all night. I think the night before last or something like that. I did get, I got a lot of Star Trek watched, I guess.
Good.
So that was cool. I'm almost done with the original series. Well, I was thinking, thank you, the slow clap. I was just thinking, having watched some of this and, you know, having seen quite a bit, it is kind of funny, the whole Star Trek premise that, like, you know, science will save us and that we'll be out rocketing through space and saving other people alongside. And also inexplicably being stopped many, many times by entities that can control everything, like mentally or telepathically.
They're all Q variants.
I swear. How many? That's right. Q. That was kind of the thing with the Next Generation with Q. Yeah. But there were so many different episodes that centered on, like, an entity that you couldn't see that would, like, shut down the entire starship, like, with its mind or with its, like, spirit or whatever. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
If a cricket chirps in space.
This is Candace's first time on the podcast.
You yes, it is. Thank you for redirecting
ask
me.
Ask her or something. You should talk to Candace.
Oh, I'm so interesting.
Well, okay, Candace, tell us a little bit about yourself. What is it that you do?
Ooh. For work?
Sure. Or for fun, whatever.
Well, for work, I work in the mental health field with children. I just got a job as a therapeutic foster care skills trainer.
Nice.
And I get to work with awesome foster families and kids who have behavioral and mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
So it just started, so it hasn't gotten intense yet, but I bet that it will.
There we go.
Eventually.
Yeah. So it's still kind of like the truly trying times will be coming later on, I suppose.
Yeah, but the great thing is I only have to spend an hour with each kid once or twice a week. So I can just drive away from them after if something horrible happens. So it'll be fine.
Sure. That's good.
Yeah.
Candace, let me ask you this. What's your favorite way to simplify the good life?
Oh, man.
Say bikes.
Bikes are good. I do bicycle. Yeah, one of the drawbacks of this job was that I have to drive everywhere. But since I haven't been visiting kids, I've been biking to work every day almost, and it's been so nice. And we haven't had any rain. It's just been icy cold. So.
Okay.
Oh, I did fall off my bike.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
You and Adele, you did that earlier this fall as well, right?
Oh, yeah, I wiped out
on some wet
leaves. Yeah.
A lot of bicycling accidents. Candace, how did yours happen?
Well, it was funny because the night before, the four of us were all sitting around talking about how we all wear helmets religiously, even though some of us haven't fallen in a really long time. And I was saying, yeah, I always wear a helmet, but I haven't fallen in a long time. And the last 2 times I fell, I just like fell on my legs. I didn't fall on my head. And then the next day I go, I'm biking in East Portland and the roads are all sparkly and I'm turning on.
That's not how it normally
Frosty
is there.
The
yeah. And I turned from Burnside to 122nd and just slid right into the bike lane. I have a giant, nasty bruise on my calf.
Wow.
And it just made me a little shaky. But,
it tore up your ride as well quite a bit, didn't it?
Not too bad. The shifter brake hood thing kind of got wonked in.
Mm.
And our friend, David Hetty.
Yeah, the famous David Hetty.
The famous David Hetty fixed it for me. Yeah, not too bad.
That's good. I was just looking for, I think I have a clip of Hetty saying something.
Which is actually really nice, too, because you don't have to fire up your big oven to warm something up.
There we go.
Okay. What a concise quote that was.
It has everything to do with fixing Candace's bike.
That's right.
You didn't have to put it in the oven.
Firing up your oven.
That's early.
But yeah, he's the one we talked to about not having a microwave. I think that was the merits of toaster ovens. I've been waiting for like a year to use that for anything. Yeah. That was that was the opportunity. But it's nice to have a guy that knows how
the
to
Advent
fix
season
stuff.
There.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. For free usually.
Definitely. Yeah. That's cuz he knows us and we're friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Adele, your bike accident wiping out.
Yeah.
It was a downhill. It was like a
slalom. On a scale of 1 to 10, that was like a 10 being the highest. That was about a 2.
Oh.
I'd say so. Not too much to brag about. I didn't have any road rash like last year, and I didn't get any. I got like a bruise on top of the other bruise I had from being hit by a car.
Precise.
You know.
You're so bad.
That was a whole other story. But in good news, I got a new bike helmet today, which is pretty sweet, and it doesn't have a crack in the back.
Right.
So it wasn't from a free pile, like the helmet I've been wearing for a year.
It's been a year?
I feel like there's a reason people put helmets in free piles.
Right.
I don't believe it would be fully functional or life-saving.
Because they've been in a crash.
Yeah. Yeah. So now I have a helmet, so if I wipe out again, my brain will be safe.
Well, that's good. And Nutcase Helmets, I believe, is the brand that you acquired, right?
Yeah.
They're classy.
Lusted after them for a year now.
Yeah.
I have one.
The design is really like kind of 60s modern. Mm-hmm. It's got a nice color scheme and everything.
Mm-hmm. Would you call that salmon?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice salmon.
It's very
color.
Northwest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, more of a salmon spread than a salmon flesh. Like a dip.
It's like salmon mixed with cream cheese.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my favorite way to have it anyways.
Delicious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We are kind of here without topics, aren't we?
Yeah.
Adele, tell us about your socks.
Oh, no.
And that's our cue. Okay.
I really was going to start talking about my socks.
Go ahead.
Well, they're just very festive and green, and they have bikes on them.
Where did they come from?
This has been Sock Talk with Adele Dennis.
They go up to the knee and down to the toe with a nice ample space on the heel.
So it's not a tube.
Well, check it out. So I was in New Seasons last week, sort of like Whole Foods, but more, you know, Portland sort of grocery store. And I saw these socks and I was magnetically attracted to them just because they're very flashy and they have bikes on them. And I wanted them, but I wasn't, you know, whatever, going to buy socks right there when I was buying my vegetables for the week. And then on Friday, I received a bunch of gifts from my parents of my preschool children. And in the gift basket were the exact socks that I had wanted in New Seasons.
There you have it.
That's awesome.
And the phone's ringing.
Yeah, carry on. Hello.
Is this someone important that we should pause?
I don't know. I had an idea of something we could talk about.
Since
it's the holiday season, maybe we could talk about how we're simplifying the holiday life.
You know, you have pioneered.
In fact, we should just scrub everything we just bullshitted about and just go right to that.
Yeah.
Brock, what do you think? Talking about how we are simplifying Christmas.
Yeah. Simplifying Christmas.
That would be nice.
Let's do it.
And now you're hearing us deliberate this on the air.
Well, I just got a call from Gina, and she's actually now prepared to speak with us. So,
damn it. Can we have a post-Christmas segment on how we simplify
Christmas?
Yeah.
Bonus.
Of course. Of course we can. Well, I'll go back and I will I'll cut down to the best parts of our conversation here and just stick it in there somewhere,
including this part right now.
Yes,
this part's awesome.
The part where we're talking about how we're going to put the show together.
Talking about how dumb our previous conversation was in comparison to Gina's interview.
Damn it, Gina.
Well, it's certainly not dumb, but it's more open source and less probably directed than other things we've done. But we are glad that you were here, and I'm really going to cut that down so it doesn't sound like
here we are just talking about it.
Cool, sounds good.
I've
got a puppet show to plan.
Yeah, let's get that little sound bite. Cool, sounds good.
That'll
be my dead space.
Yes. Candace Rhodes and Adele Dittus, thank you for joining us for this little stopgap.
My pleasure.
And
I got some rum out of it.
Yeah, yes, you did. True. All right. Well, hey. Well, should we say we go live now then? Not live, I mean.
Okay.
Nobody's listening at this moment.
We're going to act like...
Yeah. This will all be real from here on out. This is what other people will hear.
Shit's getting real.
That's
oh,
right.
Oh, I can curse, right?
Yeah, you can say pretty much whatever you want. We have no restrictions. And I trust you won't misuse that. You'll be.
She may be the first guest that would abuse that.
You won't be using your words as weapons. I know that.
Indeed.
All right. Cool. Well, hey, this is our friend Gina Robinson, and for all you podcast listeners out there who might not know, Gina used to live about two blocks from where Brandon and I live, and she was one of our most exciting friends who would always be out doing something. We would always be sitting at home, and you know, you'd get like the text message or whatever, and we'd always say, "Well, we're too lame or too old to go out,"
but we all wanted to be Gina when we grew up.
That's true. So. Anyways,
yeah, right.
It's been about 2 years since we've seen you in person. Is that right?
A year and a half, I think.
Okay, all right. It feels like a long time, I guess. Many things have happened since then. But you moved back to which part of, is it Tennessee, right?
Yeah, I moved back. I moved to, I've never lived here before, Nashville,
right.
Tennessee.
Right, but you come from kind of the eastern parts.
Yeah, I'm from Florida originally, okay. So I guess the southeast.
Right, yeah. Right. So where are you now then, and what does that place look like?
Yeah, what the hell is your deal?
Easy. So I live in Nashville, Greenlands, which is a intentional agricultural work cooperative community in the north part of Nashville, which is also the, I guess you would say, not most loved part of Nashville. I live off of Jefferson Street, which is which used to be like the hip hop happening, like black culture spot. Like Jimi Hendrix used to play on the street. Like,
nice.
If you were cool or black, this is where you were at.
Okay.
But since then, they have put in an interstate and gentrification and, you know, racism and et cetera. So now this is a space that we've kind of tried to revitalize with our community. We have four houses in our community, and we garden and we live simply, and we like it.
That's nice. No, I was going to say that sounds like the Lentz of Tennessee.
It does.
Because the Lentz neighborhood in Portland is basically like an old culture spot torn into by a freeway.
Uh-huh.
And now here we are.
It was an old like agricultural hub on the outskirts of town.
Right. With our garden beds and whatnot.
Yeah. Full of trash.
Our garden bed was pretty filthy. I remember that.
Oh my god, I'm still pulling glass out of the ground.
Are you still?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I remember finding like cloths and old bungee cables and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. I can hear you now.
Fantastic. All right. I was just talking about shit we found in our garden.
Shit you found in the garden.
Yeah. Okay. Like a bungee cable that I still use.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's what you get when you try to garden on an old racetrack, I guess.
Yeah.
So you're there, and you've been living. Maybe can you break down the elements of this place that you're living in? Because you used a lot of words, and they all sound really interesting.
Yeah, many adjectives.
Many adjectives. Yeah, I wish I had like our little contract or whatever. But so a work cooperative, meaning that we work about, well, at least my house. So we work, there's four houses in the community. In my house, we work 20 hours a month, and that is roughly about $10 an hour. So you're working off your rent. So rent would start at $300. I would work 20 hours in the garden, and then I would only have to pay $100 for the next month. It's like a credit system. So in that way, it's like living simply. We have benevolent landlords who let us, you know, do that. It's kind of, I'm kind of spoiled now though, because it's like, oh, now I, you know, I get to grow my own food and that pays for my rent. Like, how does that work in this society? But it's great, you know.
That's a pretty decent deal. You don't hear about that very often.
Yeah. No, not at all. It's really great. So there's that part of it. We're also, you know, focused on living simply. So I do some part-time carpentry work. The guy who started our community, Carl Meyer, he is 74 years old, and he worked with a Catholic worker in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And so he started this community in 1992? I don't know. 99. He's a carpenter, and he does a lot of like house projects, and he does a lot of reclaiming of materials. So any, you know, bungee cords that you find in your garden, we could probably use the same, we find lots of stuff in the alleys, and we do a lot of dumpster diving and et cetera.
Nice. You should introduce us to the other person in the room there with you, too. I just heard him making comments.
Yeah, this is Hugo Martinez. He lives in the other house. Actually, I helped build his room.
Oh,
I'm very
nice.
Proud of it.
Nice. Good to meet you, Hugo. And I guess if you're using earbuds, he can't probably hear me.
He can't hear you, but he can say hi.
Yeah, pass it along for me.
Kind of. He's nice. So nice to meet you, kind of.
All right, there we go. It's kind of a one-way through the telephone conversation sort of thing. Tell us about dumpster diving. This is something that you do often.
Actually, currently we have a whole at Hugo's house. They have a whole like freezer full, and like not a kitchen freezer, but like a whole extra like you put dead bodies in freezer. frozen bread and bananas and I don't know what else is in the house freezer.
We have bread. We have frozen bananas. We have some of the vegetables that we grew.
Yeah, lots of vegetables we haven't eaten yet. We do lots of pickling and fermenting and the things that we find and also the things that we grow.
Okay.
And so we probably go about once a week, if not more. And I think you can also get community hours for that too. So
nice. So you could pay for your rent by going out and rooting around in whatever you can find.
Yeah, getting free food for everyone. Yeah,
that's great.
Pretty good. Mm-hmm.
I think at the time that you lived in our neighborhood and were friends with it, I mean, we're still friends, but the time that you were here, we were doing a lot more dumpster diving, I think, than we do now. At this point, a lot of us have like regular jobs and stuff, and so we don't get
God,
to go
we're
out.
Getting old or something.
We are, yeah. But we don't get out to do as much of that as we used to. I do miss the days when, you know, there was like great salsa that just kind of showed up for free.
Mm-hmm.
But
Yeah. And you guys always had to go late at night, right?
Yeah. We did, yeah. So what's your situation? Do you have, are you able to go like in the daylight, bold-facedly?
Oh, yeah. I just walk up there any hour of the day and dumpster dive. I'd prefer to go during the day.
Right.
And they are really nice. They have a sign that's just like, oh, please close the doors to the dumpster. Like they know that we do it and they're pretty cool with it, which is great.
That's so different than the way that our experience has been.
Get chased out.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. So how does this work? I'm very curious. Like if the store knows that you're coming and they're okay with it, what's that conversation like? Do you ever talk to the folks that that own these dumpsters, or how does that go about?
I personally haven't. I just think the manager at our Trader Joe's is a pretty cool dude that knows that we do it and doesn't really care.
Oh,
yeah.
That's kind
of
lucky.
I think it's mostly just the manager. Yeah, totally lucky.
Wow. So what would you say? I mean, not everybody has gone dumpster diving or maybe does on a regular basis. So maybe you could give an overview of how you do it.
I mean, I guess it's pretty unusual since I drive up during the day. I guess a lot of times it's better to go at night. We do a lot of dumpster diving of a Krispy Kreme close to us. And we usually go there right after they close, which, you know, isn't the healthiest of dumpster diving options, but it makes for a fun night.
There is a ton of donuts there.
Yeah, lots of donuts. And they're smashed like little pancakes, which is kind of nice.
No kidding.
I usually walk up and I, you know, dig around and see whatever I can find for myself or just, you know, like whatever I can reach. But usually it's a lot funner to jump in and get dirty and, you know, always wash your hands afterwards, though.
That's right.
Because one time I got salmon juice on my hands. That was gross.
That smell doesn't come out very quickly.
No, it sticks with you.
And they don't call it salmonella for nothing, right?
Hey.
We'll insert some sort of wacky noise there later.
I'm sure.
But, yeah.
I can't wait.
Do you have a circuit or how many different spots do you go to, would you say, when you're on your route?
Probably just like Trader Joe's and I mean Krispy Kreme just at night, and then there's another like organic store that we go to sometimes, the Turnip Truck, but they have black garbage bags, so those are kind of a pain in the ass because you have to tear them open and like you don't know what's inside. So Trader Joe's is better because you can see what you're getting.
Sure.
Usually.
And I guess if you were worried about people like finding out that you were there, tearing open a bunch of garbage bags is a great way to say, hey, people come here and dig through your trash a lot.
Yeah. But yeah, it's pretty much just that place.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. I think what we were thinking of talking a little bit about your internship, which you were saying that this is a job you no longer have. It's something you did last year, but you were involved in some food reclamation and distribution that way.
Yeah. I was a part of the Nashville Food Project, which is a nonprofit organization focused on distributing healthy food to people in low income and homeless neighborhoods. And so I was the garden intern there from May until November. Part of it was we had a few different like aspects of programs in our organization. One was the garden program, and then another one was the food truck program. We had two catering trucks, and we would make meals. We'd make hot meals, and then we also did like lunches and snacks and things. And those would go out daily, and the hot meals would go out 2 times a week, which I think now is 3 times a week. And then we also had like produce runs. So any of the food we grew in our gardens would go out on the trucks, like market style. This winter, I think I just saw that they did like canned foods, like a canned food drive, and they just took all canned foods out on trucks. So we go to like specific food desert areas in Nashville. Food deserts being a place that doesn't have access to a grocery store within, you know, a couple miles.
Right.
Or there's a whole definition on food on food deserts being like access and ability and, you know, a bunch of different definitions of that.
Yeah.
We do a lot of food reclamation too, which we got a lot of food from local farms. And then we also got food from Second Harvest, which is a big food bank here in Tennessee. And then we got food from just donations. I mean, just anywhere and everywhere we would take food and then redistribute it, for free.
That's so pretty great. What were some of the,
it was really great.
Yeah. What were some of the specifics of your own responsibilities? Like what were some of the tasks you would do?
Yeah. For the garden program, we had two gardens. One was in our office space, which is in a swanky little neighborhood called Green Hills in Nashville. And then we had another garden that was out actually in a food desert south of Nashville. Our one garden by our office was probably like 2,500 square feet. And then our garden over in the other space was probably about half an acre or so. So it was my job to work with our garden manager. And I was mostly just there to learn, soak up all the garden knowledge I could in a few months and, you know, whatever else was needed. Cause when you're an intern, you're just basically their bitch, but
that's true. You get to basically do all the things that nobody else wants to do.
Yeah. So, you know, mostly there to learn and then do everything else nobody else wanted to do.
Okay.
Was my job. But, so we started in May and so, you know, I went through the whole summer and fall season of growing things, we grew a lot of things.
Okay.
Some of which we used in on the trucks, and then a lot of which we try to use to incorporate into our hot meals.
Right. So you kind of have a full cycle thing there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I did a good bit of cooking. I learned a lot about cooking. I don't enjoy cooking. I like to grow the stuff, but not necessarily to cook it up.
Right. I think a lot of us probably fall on one part of that spectrum. I don't think everyone really enjoys like either one prospect or the other. I really enjoy the gardening, like when I'm told what to do, but I don't really care for the cooking myself.
Yeah. I mean, and we all enjoy the eating. So.
Right. Yes. Right. That's kind of the end goal that everyone wants to get to and nobody wants to work for. But what can you do?
Exactly.
How many people are we talking about here? If you're making meals for folks, how big is the endeavor?
Yeah, our food trucks usually we fill to serve about 75 per run.
Okay,
so
that's a healthy number.
It's a good bit every day, and usually the trucks go out twice a day.
Nice, and I would assume like you've got probably for people that are economically disadvantaged or you know people that just don't have a lot to work with, there's probably lots of options, but most of them probably aren't offering really healthy, you know, straight from the ground types of meals to their clients. Yeah.
Yeah, people, I mean, we've had, like, applauses, but then we've, like, gone to give people food, and people are like, what? Are you serious? You're giving us this great food that's not, like, lasagna and pudding or something? I don't know.
Yeah.
But, I think we sometimes, the people that my coworkers, we would be like, are we foodies? Are we too much into, like, making food too healthy or too good?
You know? A tempeh lasagna as opposed to, I mean, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So... yeah, there's something else I was going to say about that, but I forgot.
It's okay. Did you dabble in kind of alternative type foods like meat substitute, that sorts of stuff, or were you kind of going pretty traditional for the people that you were feeding?
Yeah, we do some vegetarian meals, but we also do a lot of – we get meat pretty cheap from the food bank. But we're also like a pretty new organization, so we're really into like trying to figure out how we can like most sustainably and also like most locally produce food. Like, do we want to have chickens? Like, is it cost effective? Like, is it easier to just get donations or, for eggs or, so I guess we're trying to work some of that out. And we were just talking about buying into like an orchard CSA.
Okay.
Where you would pay up front and then we would get a whole bunch of fruit for like the next 5 years or.
Wow.
So yeah.
I want that.
Yeah, it's a pretty long-term sort of idea. I kind of like the idea of being with something for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly what we want to do, too, is, like, how can we make this, like, the most... I mean, also at the same time, we're in the business of going out of business, so it's... but in the meantime, while we are in business, how can we make it, you know, a long-term, like, you know... I don't really like using sustainable that much, but I guess that's what it is.
It's kind of a buzzword.
Oh, no, yeah. What the fuck is that, bro?
it's a word that's easy to throw around.
Well, yeah, okay, yeah, it's perhaps sloppily used.
Right, right. I think
it's
maybe,
like organic, you know?
Sure. Like the high concept is great, but the marketing of it kind of dilutes it down to the point where it doesn't really mean anything anymore. I think that's what I'm trying to say.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
People can be more interested in the aesthetic and the surface of it than the depth and the reality behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And so by working yourself out of a job, I assume you're talking about like you would like to help build a society that eventually does not need this organization anymore. Like if people are able to feed themselves and grow their own food in a way that doesn't require people to kind of do that for them.
Right. Exactly. And a big aspect of our organization is we have over like 600 volunteers a month, I think, that help us run the operation. So
nice.
One, I mean, that's a great opportunity for education, and we have a big education program in our gardens too. So, any volunteers is a great like opportunity to get people out there and get people growing, get people, you know, kneeling on the ground.
Yeah.
Eating dirt. So.
Post dirt.
Did you say eating dirt or eating from the dirt?
Both, I guess.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, one comes with the other, I guess.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. But it was really interesting being in an intern position. I worked with like three different garden managers. The first garden manager went on maternity leave. So then I worked with another girl who had worked on an organic farm. And then I worked with another guy who worked at a different nonprofit. So I got like three different perspectives on gardening, which was, I feel like, a really cool opportunity. It was also kind of chaos, but having like three different like gardening perspectives, and because like gardening is such a skill that takes like such a long time, and you want to make sure you do it well. And we're like so new at it, and there's so many ways you can do it, you know.
Right.
But I guess most recently I've been into the edible forest garden kind of theology. No, I guess philosophy.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a theology or not.
Tell us about it. What does that mean?
It's basically saying that nature has got it right, and nature did it right in the first place, and that we should mimic that.
Yeah.
And almost you take modern day farming, like just the very act of like putting a fork or a shovel in the ground, like could be seen as a violent act. You know, like you're breaking the ground. So I guess trying to use the earth like as non-violently as possible, and so it incorporates like lots of trees and shrubs and also like annuals and into like how they can all work together and actually be an edible garden.
Feed yourself while building up the soil instead of feeding yourself and depleting the soil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's been really fascinating to me. Like our first garden in our office space was very much like the farm style, like rows and stuff. And now I'm just like, oh, orchards and trees and, you know, I don't know, small ferns, and but also like annuals too. Like, I mean, annuals are, it's like kind of like the human plight. Like we have to have them. And so how are we going to, you know, grow annuals as, you know, less violently towards the earth as possible, I guess. So that's what I'm into now.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I've heard people talk a little bit about kind of the primitivism, I guess, sort of perspective, is just the idea that, like, really, yeah, the first wrong turn was when we decided to change the landscape to feed ourselves.
Right.
And it kind of seems like we're so far away from that now that it would be very difficult to revert entirely. But it is nice to consider that, like, there are other ways of doing things besides the traditional model that I guess we've kind of been raised with or we've grown up with.
It's not whether or not to change. I think trying to live as if we aren't part of the land is denying our creatureliness. But, you know, it's how do you live with the land in a way that's good for everybody involved instead of exploitive.
Sure, like playing nicely with each other.
Yeah. Don't fuck with each other, man. Yeah.
Precisely. Yeah.
Mother Nature will win.
Yeah. So that was that was one of the things, Gina, that you got that from one of your three overseers or supervisors or
yeah, the last guy, elders.
Okay.
Yeah, the last guy I worked with, he was really into edible forest gardens, which is a book by Dave Jackie, I think that's his name.
Okay, I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, if anybody's interested.
Yeah.
But it's like a textbook, so like beware. And there's two volumes.
Wow, so it's not light reading.
Get ready. No.
Okay. What were the other folks like? Were they more traditionally minded, like plant things in rows and?
Yeah, because they had both had farming experience.
Sure.
I think that was just like what you're used to. And that's, you know, beneficial in some way. I mean, I guess we've also been thinking a lot in our organization about, you know, what is our main goal? Like, is our main goal to mass produce food so that we can put it into hot meals and like send it out? Or is it to like be creative and like educate people and like the variety of foods? Or like, how can we incorporate all these different like aspects and perspectives on growing food in the most like efficient way to our organization at the same time?
Right.
So I guess it's just kind of been just something we've been struggling with deciding.
Yeah.
What's important.
Huh.
So.
Well, that's a cool experience.
Yeah, it really has been. And I loved like our staff meetings. We would talk all about like just the different economy that we're a part of, like how we're more a part of a gift economy than, you know, this capitalist monetary economy, and just how to function within that economy. Like you have to be able to talk about like money. So like on our website, it would say like, oh, these sweet potatoes that we grew in our garden cost $0. But it's like, yeah, but I got paid to grow those, or like how much like sweat went into those, or how much, you know, like tenderness.
They weren't like free, but they were monetarily of $0. Yeah,
sure.
Right. So yeah, how do you explain the value when all the only value we have really is like a money value?
Right. And the dollar sign doesn't explain everything.
Yeah. Price exactly. And value are not the same.
As mm-hmm. I'm sure you know from having done some of the work. Brandon and I went to the farm up in Skagit Valley.
Tierra Nueva.
That's right. Yeah. And part of their organization is a kind of a sustainable farm that has a CSA program, and they sell CSA shares to various folks around. Mm-hmm. And that was eye-opening for us, I think, just to be there. And we hadn't – I'm not sure if we had expected to do as much work as we did.
We sure did a bit, though.
Because we were on a bicycling tour, and so, you know, we've been going hard on the road for, like a week by the time we had gotten there.
Yeah, we did, I think, an 80-mile day.
80-mile day to get there. And then the next morning, we're up at, like, 7 a.m. and going out to work. And
putting links in the ground.
Yeah.
And part of that for them was the multicultural, multiracial thing of, like, Latinos and whites working together and things like that.
Cool.
I'm curious, like, you know, you're talking about being in a historically black neighborhood and doing mm-hmm. what most people would say are pretty white people stuff, white people like. Things I think they're very good things, and they're rooted more in maybe ethic than I don't know culture. I don't know, but like, there's been some pushback about intentional communities in communities of color. How are you guys negotiating that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. We actually just most recently had a racism discussion in our community, just addressing all kinds of different issues. But especially, I guess, Carl, the guy who started the community, again, he was saying, like, okay, yeah, this community did start out as like a white group of people who wanted to, you know, not necessarily make it better, but, you know, like live well on a piece of land that like no one valued, you know? But also like over time, like he has seen our community change. Like we now have like 3 Black members of our community, like 3 Hispanic members. We've had a couple Asian people. So, I mean, it's become That's a lot great. More diverse over time, which has been really exciting and a really great thing. But also I think one of the best things about living in a Black neighborhood is like the sense of community that they already have. And so like people are walking around all the time, riding bikes, and they see us riding bikes and they see us growing stuff. And a lot of them, like they'll start telling you about their grandmother who cooked collard greens and how she did it with her ham hock. And, you know, like they're just like so ready to talk about like their history and their culture and are excited to see you doing the same.
You find some points of commonality there.
Yeah, which I don't know if we would otherwise. So sure. It's been a really good conversation point. And also to have gardens like in our front yard so people who do walk by see you and you can talk to. And mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's been a really healing thing on both ends, you know.
Yeah, you have a flexible social space maybe that you can kind of start to make those connections in, I guess.
It's the front yard has been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, front yard, front porch.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too. I think, white American culture has been pretty segmented and pretty compartmentalized. Some of us are trying to decompartmentalize, but it's been broken into various experiences that kind of all have boundaries and everything. And I feel like our generation is just starting to realize that not all of that is healthy, and it's nice to be able to bounce out of it. But it's an uphill battle, I feel like. I mean, I know it is for me, especially here in the wintertime. It's cold and it's nice to be indoors and all that. But it's also nice to hear like there are examples of like what you're involved with that start to break down some of those little parameters and borders that we've put up for ourselves and start reaching out into other folks' experiences.
Right. And not to say that the work is ever done. I mean, even with our organization, like, it was great to like hand out stuff, but it's like, that's just what it is like a handout. Like, I would love to see us move more towards empowerment and, you know, like growing gardens in people's like homes or like, how can we make this more of a combined effort? Like, I don't want to just like give like, you know, meals to homeless people, but like if we can have homeless people feeding homeless people or like, we can sit down and have lunch together instead of just like get on our truck and drive away. Like, I guess, and we're trying to figure out like move more towards that kind of like relationship and like staying small. I think staying small is a really, you know, key part of that. Like, you know, seeing faces and talking to people and like establishing relationships instead of like, how many people can we feed? Like, okay, but are we meeting like exactly the needs of these people? Like, what if they need like healthcare? What if they need other things, not just food? And to be like intentional about, you know, communicating with those people and meeting their needs instead of just, you know, meeting numbers, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
And feeding numbers.
It sounds like being able to do things with people as opposed to just for people.
Right. Yeah. Which is a totally like Eucharistic thing. I don't mean to bring religion into it, but
you know us, we're fine with that.
But, you know, I guess just the idea of like sharing, you know, sharing food is such a mundane, but also such a sacred thing.
Right.
Yeah, just being intentional about how we do that.
Yeah, and a good dinner table experience is one of the best ways to get people together, it seems, on lots of levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I teach a man to fish, and that phrase is old and worn out, but it
gets the job done.
Precisely. Well, is there anything else you'd like to kick in? We should probably let you go and let you get back to the rest of your day. But anything else you'd like to share that's crazy new, exciting for you?
Crazy new, exciting. I'm eating some Indian food.
Nice.
That's pretty exciting.
Is it spicy and filled with curry?
Yes.
Excellent.
No, I'm good. It's just good to talk to you guys.
Yeah, good to hear you again. Well, I tell you what. this will be where we cut it off. But yeah, thanks so much for joining us, Gina, and good to reconnect. The Sprocket Podcast comes to you from Portland, Oregon. And you can find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. We covet your feedback. Please send us anything you'd like to say to us, anything you can suggest as an improvement, anything that you'd like to hear about. The email address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Our phone line for you to leave a message on is 503-847-9774. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music. You can find him on the internet at myspace.com/RyanJLane. And you can also find us on the Twitter at Sprocket Podcast. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.